At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. Today I'm joined by Christina Taylor, a Beat Ambassador with her own eating disorder experience. She joins me today to talk about Christmas and New Year and how to manage these situations. Hello, Christina.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, okay. A bit cold, isn't it?
It's freezing. I've literally been sat with my duvet on today. It's quite embarrassing, but I was like, I can't sit here. It's too cold without it on.
I'm under the duvet a bit as well.
Oh, good.
Good company.
Amazing. So I wondered today if we wanted to start, as the theme is Christmas. We've spoken a bit about your experiences of Christmas and your eating disorder. So do you want to give us an overview of how those things tie together for you?
Yeah, so I have EDNOS, or atypical anorexia, but I was diagnosed with anorexia originally around about Christmas in a long time ago, in 1998. I always have very strong memories of my eating disorder being at its worst around Christmas. I started therapy for my eating disorder when I was about 13. And I remember all the lights being up around Christmas. I didn't have interventions for my eating disorder initially until just after Christmas. So I remember very vividly the very, very strong eating disorder kind of thoughts and problems that I had around, you know, sort of saving up what I could eat, working out exactly what I could eat on Christmas Day. My birthday is around Christmas as well. My birthday's on the 13th. And I have the whole period just is a really strong memory of when my eating disorder has been at its worst. And I've always really struggled with kind of the social aspect of Christmas as well, because Christmas isn't just Christmas anymore, is it? Like, Christmas starts in 1st of November, seems, for a lot of people.
I think it's like as soon as bonfire's gone. Bonfire and Halloween, once they're out of the way, it's like full on full speed ahead for Christmas.
And all the food comes out and you think, oh my God, what am I going to do? Everything, every social interaction I'm going to have with people for the next 2 months is going to involve food or drink. And how am I going to cope with that? When as well, you know, it's very triggering, you know, that, because it's not just people with anorexia that struggle at Christmas. It's very cold and very isolating. But people with binge eating disorder and people with binging and purging disorders, that period of excess is a real, real struggle, because everyone's encouraging you to eat more. And then those urges of wanting to get rid of food or feeling guilty after you've eaten what you perceive to be too much food, it sort of becomes sort of like a socially ingrained thing. Someone once asked me what it's like to have atypical anorexia, to make myself sick, to have those feelings of wanting to make myself sick after I'd eaten. And I said, well, have you ever had that feeling after you've eaten Christmas dinner where you just feel like every fiber of your being is food? I was like, that's kind of what it's like every time you eat, when I've got an eating disorder. I was like, I just feel like there's food everywhere, and having that in your face all the time, and people sort of saying, oh, I put on weight, oh, I've eaten too much, I'm gonna have to be good in the new year. That's another fun one. I'm good in the new year, when people really worry about how much weight they've put on and start talking about their diet and exercise plans for January. That's a one to sit comfortably with, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you've named a lot of things there that I definitely kind of want to go on to in terms of, you know, how to manage Christmas, because I think, like you said, it can be such a challenging time,
But equally, I think, and I guess this is coming from my brain now as somebody that is quite far along in recovery, in that when, you know, when it used to be Christmas, it was like, you know, every single threat system went up and I was terrified. Whereas now I can almost see it in a rational mind and be like, well, this is a good time to challenge that anxiety to socialize or that anxiety around food. Do you think, is that something that you've been able to do? And do you think that's a sort of a good approach, or do you have a different approach at Christmas?
Definitely. I think that there's self-care involved as well. So on the day itself, I know that day for me is going to be really tough. And it's always been, just because of the food involved. And it's something that I found quite difficult. So as a family, we have a day where we just wear pajamas and we all pick one thing that we want to eat, and we eat that. And that's fine. But because I know that particular day is always going to be a tough one for me. But in my time in recovery from my eating disorder, and I am fully recovered now, I have found that pushing my boundaries and finding myself sitting with discomfort has actually been really positive. Me. So for years, the office Christmas party has always been the thing that kind of strikes dread into me. You know, I spent years and years saying, oh, I don't feel very well, or I would use compensatory behaviors and I'd drink too much to make myself comfortable around the food, or I'd make myself sick and I went out on the Christmas parties. And then when I started to go into recovery, that was a huge trigger for me, but I had to learn how to deal with it. And I'm so glad that I did. I started a new job about 7 years ago, and I started it at Christmas. And the first thing was I was invited to the Christmas party, and I was undergoing therapy at the time. And I remember going to my therapist 2 months before and just going, oh my God, what am I going to do? How am I going to sit in front of people I barely know and eat? I can't think of anything worse. And I was like, I'm new, so I can always just say I won't go. And she said, well, yeah, you could, but you could use it as an opportunity to start a new job in a much better place. You know, pushing yourself, having challenges, and feeling like you're on top of this rather than starting it at a deficit. And I went, I mean, I cried before I went because I was absolutely terrified. And I met these new people, and it was such a good idea that I went. You know, I didn't eat everything on my plate. I ate what I felt comfortable with. I didn't try and go out and eat an entire roast dinner and Christmas pudding as well. I was practical about what I could do and what I could achieve. But I went there, and I knew the discomfort of sitting with all these people watching me eat was going to be the biggest thing. And sitting there, and I ate in front of them, I talked to people I didn't really know that well, and I had a really good time. And it actually set me in a really good stead for that job, which I stayed in for a number of years. And people opened up to me and chatted to me at that party, and I made friends because I went. And it was such a good thing that I did it. And yeah, the discomfort was there. I felt rubbish at times, but I had my coping strategies in place. You know, when I felt like I needed to be sick, I texted my husband and said, I'm struggling, just say something nice. And he texted me back and said, don't worry, just chat. If we need to chat, you can leave if you want to, don't worry. And I had all these things. I set up, I knew where I could fail, and I set up ways to cope. And I think it is really important not to try and push yourself so much that you might fail, to set these impossible standards for yourself, to set yourself manageable goals over a period that is really difficult, and to be kind to yourself and to understand that recovery isn't linear, and you won't suddenly wake up one morning and be able to eat Yorkshire puddings and Christmas and turkey if you've not been able to do that before. To you know, to sit at the table with your family and eat something that feels manageable to you, that might be the first step. And then next year you might be able to do something a little bit more, and not put so much pressure on yourself to enjoy yourself, because it is about a time where you're comfortable and happy as well as pleasing everyone around you, which is what people with eating disorders always want to do. They want to make everyone else happy. But you have to take a little bit of time to protect yourself as well, and not beat yourself up if you don't do exactly, you know, nail Christmas first time.
Yeah. And that's such a good point, like, that you've kind of raised there, is I think a lot of the time, especially with anorexia, you know, it's about that perfect Christmas. And I think for, you know, parents and carers or whatever, if the eating disorder is very present in the home, I think often at Christmas people are like, okay, you know, this speaking from my experience, it would always be like, mum would be like, okay, Christmas is going to be great, Christmas is going to be the one, like, Hannah's going to be fine on Christmas Day, blah blah blah. And it builds this massive pressure of having this perfect Christmas. And that's just reminded me of this memory that my mum now laughs about, but she wasn't laughing at the time. We went into Tesco's one Christmas because me and mum always do the Christmas shopping, and I wanted to have like proper roast potatoes because we never my mum, she is a good cook now, but she never really used to cook, and I wanted to have proper roast potatoes. So I wanted this perfect Christmas dinner, and genuinely we had an argument for about half an hour about whether we were going to have frozen Aunt Bessie's or we were going to have actual roast potatoes. And my mum thought that it was coming from like an eating sort of perspective, that I wanted to have proper ones rather than the Aunt Bessie ones. But for me, it was wanting to have a perfect Christmas and have everything homemade and it be all wonderful. And I think that just kind of like that situation to me just sums up how an eating disorder kind of takes over at Christmas, because everybody's got the, oh my God, something's going to go wrong because of the eating disorder. It's not going to be perfect. So, sorry, I've completely gone off on one there.
No, that's exactly what I the first time I used to feel like, exactly how you said, like Christmas always had to be perfect. And because I've got two small children, I always used to split the day between either going to my husband's parents or to my parents. And I used to always feel the food there was, you know, it was so out of my control, and I used to feel so uncomfortable. But I envisioned that the perfect Christmas was sitting with family, drinking wine and having this big turkey. And that was what I would push myself every single year to do that, even though it wasn't what made me happy at all. And actually, what makes us more happy is staying at home and playing Mario Kart with my son in our pajamas. And you know, I say to my kids, like, what do you want to eat? And they don't care. They don't care what we eat. They don't care if I make a perfect roast dinner, mainly because I don't think it's in my capability to do so. But you know, I give it a go. But I say to my kids, what do you want? And they're like, sausages, really. That's all we want. And my Christmas isn't ruined because that's what they want to eat. It's about a day when we all just get to spend time together and play with our Christmas presents, really. And I have to remind myself that it's not about the food. And I really strongly resisted. My mum, as a Christmas present to us every year, says to me, can I do a Christmas food order for you? And I was always like, no, I'm going to make it all from scratch. It's all got to be perfect. I'm going to peel every vegetable myself. And I thought, like, after the first year when I did that, I thought, why do I want to do this myself? Like, it's so much more fun to get it delivered and just stick it in the oven, and I can sit and, you know, I'll go and look at it every now and again. And I was like, well, what? Why do I need to do that? My kids don't notice the difference. My kids like complain if I get expensive cheese sauce sometimes. You know, they prefer the supermarket own brand. They don't care. They don't notice. What they care about is what's in their stockings. And I realized that the only person who really cared about it was me. And I sort of thought, maybe I should stop caring. And since I started doing Christmas on my own terms, it's meant that I have kind of embraced the idea of experimenting more and trying new things and eating things I never would have done. Like last year, I had my own safe version of a cheese plate, and I was like, wow, I could never have done this. But it's because I kind of accept what my own boundaries are now, and I don't try and say, yeah, this is what has to happen every Christmas. But I make sure that everyone else has got what they want as well. Like for years, my kids were like, do we have to have a Christmas pudding? And I was like, yes, it's Christmas. And then they were like, but can't we have something we like instead? So we started getting them chocolate cake because that's what they like. Mm. And yeah, it's, you put so much pressure on yourself. And my family, I think we always did have family round because my brother and sister are a lot older than me, and it was a chance for me to spend time with them. But I just remember when I was really in the grips of my eating disorder, just thinking about what was on my plate and just wanting the day to be over. Mm. And it's not really what I want, but I'm sure there's so many people out there who that whole day, they just wake up and they just want it to be over so they can go back to everything being normal. Because it's just stress, isn't it? It kind of sucks all the joy out of it. Yeah. It's not really what you want it to happen.
Yeah. I think you're right though. I think that's definitely for me has been how to kind of enjoy Christmas more, is to take that focus away from the food. And I don't necessarily think that that's from like a disordered perspective, but I think I agree with you in that you know, I hate Christmas pudding. I genuinely can't stand it. I don't understand why people actually like to eat that. But I felt like I had to have it, like you said, because it was Christmas. But now I will have like a Yule log or something. You know, it can still be Christmassy, like you've said. Mm. I guess my question for you there would be, like, how can you, I mean, and this might depend on like the kind of place you're at with your recovery, but how do you think you can honestly say to yourself, like, I genuinely want this food rather than this other food, because this one I actually prefer more rather than that one terrifies me more, if that makes sense?
I think once there's sort of like a stage of recovery that you move into where you think it's less about the numbers that's in something and more about what it tastes like. And I guess the only way that I found that was trial and error. And I think that's something that's really difficult for people with eating disorders, because when you come to meals have so much pressure on them. Every meal, isn't it? You know, every meal has to be perfect, and if something's wrong with it, that can like absolutely crumple, and it can ruin your day if like a meal is a little bit off. And yeah, I guess like one of the kind of massive learning curves for me, even as someone who's kind of quite on top of their recovery, was the pandemic and the food shortages and all the things that I really liked eating. Like one of my foods that I was always really comfortable with was pasta, which was sort of in quite short supply in the early days of the pandemic.
Oh yeah.
And I had to find other things, and it made me realize how I had to try things, and that I was limiting myself so much by keeping to things that were comfortable and safe just because they were easy. And I wasn't really worrying about what was in them. I was more worrying about what was sort of didn't require a lot of thought to deal with. So yeah, I try to introduce something new as much as I can. And just, I think, you know how it's going to make you feel sometimes. Even when you've been in recovery for a long time, you know that something new is always going to make you feel very uncomfortable, or just have that little niggle that you don't really want. So I sort of try to mix it up throughout the year and try new things, and sort of push my boundaries as much as I can, and just figure out. And some things I just don't like them. And I always think that everything I didn't like I actually would like if I didn't have an eating disorder, but things like meat, I mean, I don't like meat. I just don't like it. It makes me feel a bit gross. And I've tried eating meat to see if it's me that doesn't like meat or it's my eating disorder that doesn't like meat, and it's just I just don't like it. I haven't eaten meat properly since I was about 7, and yeah, I'm just not. The texture of it is something that I don't particularly like, but I know a lot of people are afraid of things like meat and dairy. And I suppose one way I found whether I like things or not is I did try things in small portions to see how I felt about them, and if I did like them, the next time I made it a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger and a little bit less scary, which is quite kind of in reverse to how a lot of people do it. I think a lot of people, they have to have that bang on exposure therapy, the whole thing. Whereas when I started really testing my boundaries, you know, things like, for example, a pizza, I was quite scared of a pizza. So I got quite a small one and I tried that one and I did it and I thought, oh, I quite like that. And then the next time I got a Domino's because I thought, well, I liked it. I might as well go all out.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point, though. I think one part of recovery that I've really enjoyed, actually, in a weird way, is being able to say, I love that food, or I actually don't like that food, but knowing that it's genuinely coming from I actually don't like that food rather than like I'm terrified of it, so I'm gonna have to say. And I think you're completely right as well. When you're in the depth of an eating disorder, you think, I bet I'd love that food if I could have it. But then actually giving yourself the freedom to try it and to make your own judgment, I think that does really help.
I used to like dream about food when I was really ill, when I was about 10 years ago, when I was around, I suffered quite badly with my eating disorder when I was pregnant with my children. And I used to just sit there and think, if I could eat anything, what would I eat? And I would just list off the foods in my head. And now I actually eat what I like eating and none of those foods are in there. It's just my brain was so starved of food.
Yeah.
It was just thinking about food all the time, which is just one of the most
fascinating things about eating disorders to me, that when you aren't eating enough, your brain makes you seek out food by just making you think about food all the time. It's just fascinating.
I've heard that quite a lot, and I know like from personal experience as well, I had that too, and I think it is fascinating, like you said. And another thing that I kind of wanted to pick up on of what you said was talking about sort of the control at Christmas, because I think for a lot of people, kind of, you know, you might be at home and you might be cooking Christmas dinner, but for other people, they might be going out or they might be going to family. And again, I think like at the initial stages, I wanted to control everything that was cooked, but actually being able to hand over to somebody else and say, you know, you do it. And be okay with that was actually a really positive step forward. So what are your thoughts about sort of things like control at Christmas? And if that is something that people struggle with, how do you think they can sort of navigate through that?
Yeah, I used to really struggle with control. I remember in the very early stages of my eating disorder recovery, my therapist told me to get my husband to cook a meal to kind of try and sort of eke me back a little bit, and I just stood at the door going like, have you cut this like this, have you done this, and I was just like hovering around him like a bee. I couldn't stop, and I remember by the end of it I was just sitting on the floor crying because I just couldn't watch someone else cooking food that I then had to eat, and it was such a difficult experience. But kind of exposure to that over time has become so much easier, and now actually when my husband wants to cook it's a relief because I'm knackered. But you know, I had to do that kind of controlled exposure to it in the first instance. So I think I probably say to people, like, to start with, try and practice those feelings up to the day, because if you just sort of say to yourself it'll be fine on the day, it probably won't, and you'll probably put yourself through loads and loads of stress, and you might ruin Christmas for yourself. And it might have an impact on them putting pressure on the people who are cooking for you. And that might be really difficult for everyone. And it's not a day where you want that. So maybe try and practice, maybe, you know, do a practice run with someone, and you can sit with those feelings of discomfort and have the meltdown earlier on. And then you know how your reaction is going to be. Or maybe try eating some bits of the things that might be on your plate, might be another way for people to sort of get used to it. Rather than, I used to be a very black and white thinker, and I would think like, I'll just put it out of my mind until the day and then I'll do it and it will be fine. And inevitably it never was fine. I just used to panic or do something compensatory to deal with it. I used to, when I used to go to other people's houses, I used to sort of go, it's fine, I'll have a glass of wine and that will make it all better. And then I would drink too much and I would lose control of what I was thinking about and doing, and it would inevitably make the situation worse. So I guess my advice would be to give yourself kind of a controlled exposure to the things that make you feel uncomfortable leading up to the day. And if you can, and I know that people can't always do this, but to speak to the people who you'll be with and to let them know sort of some things that would make you feel more comfortable. So when I used to try new foods and I used to feel really uncomfortable, I used to have like a comfort food that I would eat alongside it. So like a certain vegetable that I always felt that I could eat and that wouldn't make me feel anxious. And I would have that on my plate with the things that made me feel really, really stressed whenever I tried something new when I was first kind of getting used to things. You know, it might be worth suggesting that you can have something there that would bring you comfort that you know that you can eat alongside everything else. Openness and honesty is always the best way to go about things, but I know it's not as simple as being open and honest. For example, for me, I concealed having an eating disorder for a long, long time with the people I worked with. I found it really, really uncomfortable because I thought people would just think I was really weird and no one would understand. But then I did a big article in my workplace, and there's 16,000 people where I work, so it's quite a lot. And I did a big article about how workplace social events can be really uninclusive to people with eating disorders, and how you can feel really outside and isolated. And that was like ripping a big plaster off, and I had to just sort of suck it up. But then, and whenever I had conversations with anyone about social events, people would actually ask me what made me feel comfortable and say, oh, if we're doing this, are you going to be okay with that? Whereas before, I'd have had to make excuses and say, oh no, I don't feel very well, or oh no, I've got to look after my kids, when really I wanted to go, I just didn't want to eat anything. And I didn't think I could sit there while all of my colleagues had a dinner and I would just sit there feeling deathly uncomfortable. So having people who, I think people always expect the response to someone having an eating disorder to be worse than it actually is. When I told most people, I expected, and oh my God, you, I mean, one of my favorites was, you don't look like you've got an eating disorder, which was an old boss of mine. And I was just like, thanks. but most people were like, oh, you manage it so well and you've got such a positive outlook on life. I always expected people with an eating disorder just to be really, really thin and really, really ill. And I was like, well, you're not, you can have a functioning eating disorder. And actually most people with an eating disorder aren't really thin. You know, people with severe anorexia are a very small percentage of people with eating disorders. And I was really glad to be able to increase people's understanding of what it's like to have an eating disorder and to make people more inclusive in how that they are socially. And people said that, you know, that when they've considered doing social things, and not just at Christmas, at you know, bigger events, that they've started thinking about, we're all only round a table. And so like one of the social events we did the following year was a quiz, because then we had a buffet and people could eat if they wanted to, but it wasn't, we were all sat around a table with a plate in front of us. It was a social way of doing stuff that didn't only focus on food. And I was really grateful that my colleagues, when I shared something with them that was so personal, had gone out of their way to make something supportive and inclusive of the fact that I didn't feel 100% comfortable filling up a giant plate and eating in front of them. And it meant that it was easier for me to kind of integrate with them and to socialize as well, because the focus wasn't wholly on food. On Christmas Day, the focus kind of is on food. So I guess it's about asking what you can do, what people can do to be supportive, and say, like, can we have time where we can do something like this? Is there something that I can do to kind of get my focus off food? Is there someone safe I can talk to when I'm struggling at the table? Because there will be someone safe that you can talk to, even if it's a mate, even if you want to just text your friend and say, oh my God, my plate's making me feel really stressed. That's a safe thing that you can put in place to make that day a little bit more manageable for you. I think I've gone a little bit off track there, but
I mean, you're bringing out loads of fantastic tips, so it's absolutely fine. I think what you've just said about kind of, you know, your work being so supportive, it kind of just made me think, you know, I mean, that is, you know, fantastic, but people may not want to go, you know, currently on the 7th of December to their boss and say, I want you to change our Christmas party. But it did just make me think, you know, for the future, that is absolutely fantastic. And I'm really glad that your work were so inclusive. But also just on Christmas Day, thinking about, you know, rather than, because I think a lot of the time, I mean, I know, again, I'm talking just for me personally, it'd be like, we're having dinner at 2 o'clock. Nothing's happening before, nothing's happening after, we're having dinner at 2 o'clock. And I'd be like, my God, if I wake up at 9 o'clock, that's several hours until I'm then going to eat, and then several hours afterwards. So I think something I always tried to do was to be like, oh, you know, could we play a game, you know, just before dinner or after dinner, or, you know, can I help set the table before we have dinner or whatever, just to provide distractions. And
yeah, giving yourself things to do is a really good idea.
Just because, you know, sitting down is fantastic, but if you go from whizzing around a million miles an hour in your day-to-day life to then on Christmas Day you have to sit down, that's another pressure that you're applying to yourself. And I think it just, you don't have to go from 100 to 0 or 0 to 100. You can kind of gently, you know, do what feels right for you. So do you have any tips for people to kind of provide those distractions during the day before, the day after, whatever?
You could take responsibility for organizing a game or something, or you know, you could, I'm quite lucky because I have kids, so I'm literally on
you just
my
have very easy long. Distractions.
If your family are one where you have a walk, you know, say, can we go, if you know that you're going to feel really, one of the things that I always used to struggle with is, after I'd eaten, what was I going to do with myself to stop myself being sick? You know, one of the things could have been go for a walk with my husband, because you can't make yourself sick when you're walking around outside. And it's going to reduce that anxiety of, oh, I'm sitting around just absorbing loads of food, which is a totally real feeling that I think everybody has on Christmas Day, not just people with eating disorders. you know, opening presents, offering to clear up is always a good one, because no one wants to clear up on Christmas Day. So offering to, you know, follow, you know, help out, help, keeping yourself away from the food. But I think things like organizing a quiz, like that could be your thing. You know, if you have a family and you know, writing a quiz, doing the quiz, writing a game, something like that. There's loads of games out there, like 5 Second Rule. That's always one I play at Christmas because my kids love it, even though they're terrible at it. But it's one that's quite low effort. But if you want to make a special contribution to the day, then maybe you could write a Christmas quiz for your family. And be the quiz master and stuff, because that keeps your mind on that and keeping the scores and everything. And then that's something fun that you brought to the table that isn't food to the table. Because I mean, it is really important to remember that for most people, food is like a really important way that people socialize. And it is really hard for people to understand the idea that food kind of just strikes fear into your core of your being, you know. And I think most people aren't being unkind if they aren't considerate. They have literally no concept of the idea that this isn't fun for you. They just they can't get their heads around that. My husband, you know, we've been together for 13 years, and he just cannot understand why. Well, he couldn't understand that. It's not like that now, but he couldn't understand why there were periods in my life where one type of yogurt would make me cry instead of another type. He just, for him, food is just fun. It's just nice. He likes it. He enjoys a day where he can do anything he wants. And that point, like you were saying with people at work, that kind of conversation isn't going to your manager and saying, I want you to change the Christmas party so it fits around me, because that's necessarily a way to frame a conversation in a positive way. But a positive way of maybe framing it is saying, I know everyone really enjoys this, but is there an activity that we could do first so that maybe I could feel more comfortable? But in the same time, always saying that you kind of appreciate that food is a really social part of everyday life. And you aren't like making people want to change because of you. You just want people to be supportive of the things that you're going through. Because if somebody had, say, you know, suffered with alcoholism and every social event was down the pub, you wouldn't be criticized for saying, would it be okay if we did something that's not really triggering for me, because I find it really difficult. But at the same time, I don't want you guys to stop having fun. I just wonder if we could maybe the next time we could go for a coffee, or we could go for a lunch together or something like that. And I think it's really important to kind of acknowledge that that part of the day is really important for some people, and to make your contribution to their day something important as well. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's such a good point that you kind of raised about the fact that for a lot of people, food is celebration. And, you know, I think like something that definitely springs to my mind there is for my grandma, cooking and feeding is the way that she shows her love. And so that for me was always something really difficult to navigate, because it was almost offensive to her for me to say, oh, I always remember she'd be like, do you want this? And I'm like, oh, I'm okay, thank you. And she's like, I'm not asking you how you are, I'm asking you if you want some food. But that was quite challenging, because it made me feel very uncomfortable, and she could see that discomfort. But that had always been her way of kind of showing that she loved her family. So I guess a question there would be, maybe from both sides, as the individual that's in recovery, how to speak to family members, you know, or whether you want to speak to family members, or if you don't, what to do there. But then equally, as a family member, you know, how to maybe try and support your loved one on Christmas Day.
I think it is really tricky, because I mean, I've had an eating disorder since I was 13, and I'd rather not say how many years that is, but it's a lot. And my mum still doesn't understand. My mum still thinks that if she gets the food I normally eat and puts it in front of me, everything is fine, and it doesn't matter when I eat it or how I eat it or what I've eaten earlier that day. And that's how my mum, you know, my mum is like, how my mum's probably about the same age as your nan, to be honest, because my mum's nearly 80, and she loves people by feeding them. That's just who she is. And I had to be with my mum, because she's my mum, I can be quite firm and quite honest and just say, look, mum, I'd rather not talk about food. You know, food's a thing that makes me feel uncomfortable sometimes. Would you mind just not suggesting any food? I'm here, and me being here is what's important. Let's just focus on that. But that's my mum, and that's a very different relationship to, say, my mother-in-law. And that conversation, I was really worried about hurting her feelings and upsetting her, because she loves hosting, she loves having people around, and she does a great job, and she tries really hard. And I felt always, if I didn't eat certain things, that I was kind of hurting her feelings or not participating and being offensive. And so in that respect, I actually asked my husband if he would mind just saying to my mother-in-law, because I felt really uncomfortable, and I didn't have any reason to, but it was just me being anxious about it. Mm-hmm. And I said, would you mind kind of saying to your mum that I do have a problem with food sometimes, and sometimes it's easier for me just to come and not eat certain things, or to eat at my own pace, and it's not an insult to you. So I think having a trusted kind of advocate or someone that you're close to, if you're in a family, maybe like a brother or a sister who can speak, or a parent who can say to your extended family, you know, this is kind of what they might do. Please don't ask any questions, because it's going to make them feel uncomfortable, and don't take it personally, because sometimes you just need that middle person. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that, that is really tricky. But people should, you know, if people know that you've got an eating disorder and they are taking offense to behaviors that you have around food, I think what's really important is to remember that the problem there is them, it's not you. Mm-hmm. Because people know, you know, eating disorders are very misunderstood. People think that if you eat, you are fine, and that's not the case. And you know, I think that people often think that they are the problem, because they're not snapped back to normal, and that they should be back to normal, and everything should be easy, and they put a lot of pressure on themselves. But if people aren't responding in an appropriate way, that you're doing your best, and you need to be kind to yourself about that, and you need to be giving yourself as much of, you know, as bigging yourself up as much as you can, because if you've tried your hardest on that day to do as much as you can for yourself and for your family, for the people you love, and someone's still being awkward about it, that's on them. They've obviously got their own issues that it might be that they struggle to lose weight, and they see somebody who is quite small or isn't eating the way that they're eating, and they can't control their own urges around foods, and that sets something off in them, and that might just be them. And I think it's really important to try and separate yourself and realize that people don't necessarily understand your eating disorder, but you may not understand what their issues are around food, and they may just take that out on you. Like one year my sister said to me, well, don't worry, carrots are carbohydrates, and if you eat those, you'll put on loads of weight. And I was just like, what? And she was just talking rubbish, because she wanted to wind me up, but it's because she had loads on her plate and she felt really guilty, and she just did it because she knew it would wind me up. At the time I was devastated, and I ran off and I sat in my garden and I cried, and I just said to my mum, I can't eat anything, I don't know what I'm gonna do. Retrospectively, my sister was just having a really bad day, and I felt, you know, and I probably wasn't being that nice to her either. To take some time out to kind of reflect on that, and to realize that I think people with eating disorders take a lot on their shoulders, and blame themselves for a lot of things. And it isn't always, Christmas can be really hard for a lot of people, not just, you know, and I think seeing your family being in those situations, there tends to stir up a lot of emotions that people might not be aware of. So just, if you feel uncomfortable, probably everyone feels uncomfortable, not just you. And it's not just about you.
Yeah. And I think, especially kind of with the past few years that we've had, in that, you know, it's not been as easy to see family. You know, last year Christmas for me was very small, it was just me, mum and dad, whereas normally it would be a lot bigger. I guess one thing that people might be thinking about this year is around the comments that people might make, you know, maybe people have seen their loved ones, but I don't know, maybe not as frequently or something, they've maybe not had a meal with them specifically. How would you say to navigate those comments? I mean, you just given a lovely example of your sister, but I distinctly remember being sat with my grandma, and she said something that I'm not going to say again about a particular food we're eating, and I just ran upstairs and I cried. And, you know, looking back, I'm still angry that she said it, because she knew exactly what was going on, but equally I'm angry at myself for letting it get to me, and kind of it ruined everyone's day, not just mine. But then equally, you know, you look back and you think, well, I had an eating disorder, I wasn't asking to get upset about her comment. So I guess, you know, how would you say to navigate that sort of thing?
So what I always try to do is to remind myself that I am hypersensitive to any comments about my appearance. And it's very unlikely that anybody would say anything to me about my appearance and mean it as an insult that cared about me. So, I mean, I think everyone's familiar with the "you look well" comment. That's always one, isn't it? And when someone with an eating disorder hears "you look well," what do you actually hear? "You look fat. You've put on loads of weight. You're obviously..." And I always used to hear comments like that. And I think it used to strike off this huge fear in me that if I looked well, that people would stop caring if I didn't feel well. Mm. And I always felt that unless my body showed how I really felt inside, that nobody cared if I was struggling, and people would just kind of ignore me and put my feelings to one side. When, to be honest, and I've written a blog about this, sometimes when I've been physically bigger, I've been much more severely ill. Mm. And I did that to illustrate that eating disorders can happen at any shape and size, that you don't have to look well to be well. It can actually be a lot more serious than what's on the outside. But people mean that because they like you. People mean, "I am so glad you don't look like you're going to pass out," or "I am so glad you don't look grey," or "your face isn't..." For me, it used to be, my face used to be really swollen, and because of all my glands. And people, when they looked at me, they actually meant, "You look really nice. You look really healthy. You don't look like you're hurting yourself anymore." But it's not socially acceptable to say you don't look like you're causing yourself pain, because there's no kind way of saying that. So you say you look well because it's more comfortable. And whenever I say to anyone, I speak to so many people and they say, "Oh my God, someone said I look well and I feel fat." And I accept that probably will be said. But what people mean when they say "you look well" is they mean, "I am happy to see you. You look happy." But also, if people are listening to this and you have a loved one with an eating disorder, try not to say "you look well." Try to say, "It's so great to see you smiling," or "How have you been?" Don't say "you look physically well," because I think, you know, especially when people are on a recovery plan, your body gets well much quicker than your brain, and you can be miles behind mentally eating something, but you know you're eating a prescribed diet that's in front of you, so you can appear to be so much further towards recovery than you might actually be. And the hardest days might be in front of you when you have to take that responsibility for yourself and maintaining it. So to keep having awareness that if you do have a loved one with an eating disorder, that what's in front of you is probably not what's going on behind their eyes, you know, in their mind, that they probably are really struggling. And to try and keep comments about them as a person rather than their physical appearance. But I think for most people, it's a relief, you know, like, I have kids and I say to them, "Oh, you look beautiful today. You look so lovely." And my daughter will just go, no, please don't speak to me about how I look. What do you know about how I look?" And, you know, and I look at her and I just think she is the most beautiful child in the world. But she'll say, "Oh, Mum, I am not pretty. I don't like this about myself." And I know that there's nothing I can say that will change her opinion of that, but I think she's beautiful, and I'm genuinely saying these things because I think that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what a lot of people are saying. They're saying it from a genuine place of love and care, but equally, yeah, it's hard not to be sensitive. When I was pregnant with my son, my mother-in-law said to me, quite rightly, "Oh, don't you look great? You look like you're doing really well. You look blooming and stuff." And I was horrified, and I looked at my husband, I burst into tears, I went off and I got changed, because I was like, "I look fat, I look awful." But what she actually meant was, in your previous pregnancy you were seriously emaciated and unwell and you looked very, very ill. This pregnancy you're doing a lot better. But that's what she meant to say, and she was just relieved that I didn't look like I was going to pass out. But I took it so personally, just try not to take it personally, and remember that people love you. And they don't say things like that to hurt you. It's all meant from love.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, you've given such a nice overview there of kind of both if you're in the eating disorder, if you're, you know, if you're very far along in recovery. I think, you know, still today, if I'd seen a family member and they commented on my body, I'd be like, "Oh, I don't like that." But I think that's more just because you know, don't want people to comment on my body than anything. So I think that was really nice that you kind of gave such a broad overview. Something else that I wanted to just ask about, because I'm aware we've spoken a little bit about anorexia and bulimia, but I think, you know, Christmas can be quite a challenging time for people with binge eating disorder as well. There's a lot of food possibly, and, you know, family around, and again, comments. So do you have any tips if somebody's struggling with binge eating disorder for navigating the kind of festive period?
So I don't have binge eating disorder myself, and I don't want to speak on behalf of people mm-hmm. with binge eating disorder, but as part of my eating disorder, I did used to, I'm trying to think of the word, is, I did used to subjectively binge and make, you know, and use compensatory behaviours. So
yeah.
One thing that I have found very helpful in kind of trying to be preventative about getting myself into those situations is to have controls in place to make sure I've got like a safe amount of food that I know I can eat, and have, and sort of hold myself accountable to say, you know, not have the other things in the house. I used to just not have my trigger foods in the house that I knew I would possibly eat too much of and make myself sick. And I used to say to my husband, don't buy these foods because I know that I will make myself sick, or you know, do other things. And I took me a really long time, and then I had to control to introduce them back into my diet when I felt safe and ready to do so. But I had to do stuff like, when I went through a very severe period of purging, when I came out of that, I would do stuff like leave all the doors open to hold myself physically accountable to other people in the house, because I couldn't be secretive. So I guess if you have secretive places where you hide food to, you know, make people aware of them, do, you know, put controls in place, have a plan with someone, you know, with a therapist about how you're going to control you know, the problems that you might face around this time, and give yourself safeties. Like, are there things that you know will prevent a binge? Is there something to do that can be distracting or supportive to that? Is there someone you can speak to kind of support that? You know, culturally at Christmas, it's very binge driven, so it's really hard. Mm. And just to remember to be considerate to yourself, and also not to beat yourself up if there is a mistake. If you do have a blip or something goes wrong, you know, everyone does it. Everyone has blips. Everyone struggles at times, and not to let it derail the whole festive season for you. You know, go that's today. Tomorrow is a new day, and I'll get back on track, and I'll be okay. But I don't want to speak on behalf of people with binge eating disorder, because it's not my area of expertise, and I wouldn't want to sound patronizing at all.
No, I think I agree with you. I think I just wanted to kind of mention it, because I think often there's a lot of talk this time of year, especially when we're in eating disorders, about how, you know, how to manage anorexia, how to manage bulimia. And I think binge eating disorder is left behind. But I think, you know, I personally haven't had binge eating disorder either, but I can imagine that with the amount of food that's around, and almost it, like you said, it's that promotion of binging. And I remember, you know, on Christmas Day or whatever, and my mum would be sat there really, really full, but she'd be like, I've got to have this mince pie because it's Christmas Day. And it was as though tomorrow that food is not going to exist anymore, and we can't have Christmas food tomorrow. And I almost feel like now that period is stretched until kind of New Year's as well, in that, you know, this is the only period of time we can eat that food. And then this has so nicely brought me on to my next question, actually. New Year's rolls around, and then you've got everybody coming up with their New Year's resolutions, which are predominantly, you know, not everybody, but predominantly based around weight loss, starting a new exercise regime. I don't even know. It's cringe wanting to think about it. But what do you have any tips for people in managing sort of the new year kind of thing? Because one thing I wanted to just say was, every single new year, I said to myself, my New Year's resolution is to recover. And it's almost as though if you set, and this is just, again, from my personal experience, but setting it as a New Year's resolution never worked, because New Year's resolutions in themselves are short term. They last, most people don't even last until February on their New Year's resolution. So I guess what would be your kind of advice for people with those comments? Let's start with that before I waffle on anymore. The comments around New Year's.
what I actually did New Year's resolution wise is that when the new decade rolled around, I said to myself, like, I'm not going to set myself unrealistic goals about what I want to do, because I kind of like, I wanted to learn something new, and I'm doing a degree in clinical psychology now. And I, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with that, but I wanted to do something to help people with eating disorders. And that was kind of my goal. And I said to myself, I'm going to give myself 10 years to try and work out a way of doing that. And so that's what I stretched it out, and I made my goals kind of manageable. So not like, oh, this year I'm going to solve, you know, all wars or something like that. Unrealistic. But I do want to change myself, but I know that if I try and change myself in 12 months, it's probably not going to happen. And then I'll be annoyed at myself for not doing it. So I said to myself, give yourself a decade, see how it goes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would suggest setting yourself kind of manageable goals, if that's the sort of thing that kind of is good for you, because some people with eating disorders are consummate perfectionists and have very black and white thinking, and if they don't get to the goal that they've set themselves, everything has failed, the whole year is a disaster, because that's just the kind of way your brain works with some kinds of eating disorders, that you think, if I haven't succeeded, I've failed. Not that I've tried and I've made all these brilliant steps towards what I wanted to do, I failed because I didn't do what I wanted to do. And that's not necessarily the sum of everything you've done in a year. So, with regards to I must lose weight and I must exercise and I must get healthy, well, you know it's coming. It's like a storm. You have to just mentally prepare. It's coming. And you know that people are, you know... psychology of dieting, people who are depriving themselves of food are going to talk about food all the time, and you know that. You know that if people aren't eating less than they should be eating, their brains are going to be seeking food, and they're going to start talking to you about food. They're going to start talking about the calories that they're eating, probably going to start talking to you about what they're going to have for dinner when it's lunchtime, because they haven't eaten enough for lunch and they're thinking about food. And I mean, one thing that when I was working in an office, I used to just say to people, I need to remove myself from this conversation. I'm really sorry. It's not healthy for me to be around this. I can't talk about the calories in foods because I find it really difficult and it can spoil certain foods for me. I just enjoy food. And that's a healthy way for me to be. And I had to be that clear with people, and people would still forget, and they would talk to me about the fabulous progress they'd made on the 5-2 diet or whatever it was. And I would just be, some people can get really angry and say you're promoting eating disorders. And yes, in some ways, going for large periods of time without food is very triggering for people with eating disorders, particularly people with restrictive eating disorders. But, you know, it's the same with sort of socializing and food. And that if that's what makes somebody happy, then you have to have some degree of acceptance. Like my husband was on Slimming World for about a year. But he was not happy with who he was. And I said to him, I could do this for you. You know, I can give you advice on how to eat. But he said, I don't want to be accountable to you. This is my thing. I want to do it. This is the way I want to control my weight. And it was horrible. And I found it really difficult being in that environment where he was worrying about his weight. He was weighing himself all the time. And I had to ask him to move the scales. I said, I don't want them in the bathroom because it's upsetting for me. I don't want the temptation of getting on them, because I know that even if I get on them and I haven't gained any weight or lost any weight, it's not a healthy way for me to be because I don't weigh myself. And he, you know, he would talk about food. He would eat less than me at times. And I found that really difficult. I was sat there going, you're a man, you're supposed to eat more than me. That's how science works. How can I cope? Oh my God, I'm going to get impossibly fat. You know, that's what my brain was doing. But I was thinking just about me in that respect. I wasn't necessarily thinking about what was good for him mentally. And for him to have stopped doing that, he would have had to sit in a way of feeling that was very uncomfortable for him. And a lot of people do feel that way after they've had a period of excess, and it is quite normal. And like you said, by February, normally it's gone. So it's just a period of time. And I think it's very difficult when you're suffering. It can feel like everything is an attack on and an assault on your recovery. But it is also about being considerate to the people around you and thinking that those people probably are suffering themselves in guilt and the way that they feel. And if that makes them feel better, it'll probably fizzle out, it'll probably go away. And just to be as upfront as you can with people, or to try and distance yourself. When I couldn't be honest with people about how I felt, I just used to put my headphones in at work and not listen, or I would go and get a drink and just take myself away from the situation. So I think if someone is directly having a conversation with you about food, and the worst thing for me was if I was eating something, someone would say, oh, that's not allowed on my diet, and I would just want to throw it out the window. I would just have to be quite honest and say, well, I'm not on a diet. This is my diet. And for me to be healthy, I have to eat things like this because it's good for my brain. And you just have to be quite kind of firm with people. And they'll go away and they'll find someone else who's interested in talking to them about food to listen to and to talk about, because there's loads of people who are on diets at the same time. But yeah, I guess my kind of very long-winded point there was to sort of say that it will pass, and to sort of prepare yourself. It won't last forever. And by Easter, everyone will be talking about chocolate again.
I really liked what you said about thinking about other people, because I think I am so guilty of being like, if anybody's around me, you can't be on a diet because that's going to trigger me. But, you know, now in retrospect, I can look back and think how selfish of me to say you can't do something that's going to, you know, even if it was just somebody starting to go to the gym more because they wanted to, you know, get a bit of exercise in. I guess so. As I'm saying that, I am also thinking, I think it comes from a place of love, purely based on the fact that, you know, when somebody does start dieting or does start exercising, my trigger warnings go off and I'm like, beep boop, eating disorder, don't stop it, blah, blah, blah.
So I was watching my husband for him developing an eating disorder, because it happened to me, and I thought that it's the same. I was like, he's on a diet, so he's going to develop an eating disorder.
Yeah.
But he didn't, and he eventually got bored with it and he stopped going. And I felt really uncomfortable while he was doing it, but I had to learn to accept it, because otherwise I was asking somebody I loved to be uncomfortable with themselves just to make me happy, and I didn't think that was fair. But it took me time, you know. I didn't wake up the next day and go, yes, that's it, I've come to an epiphany. You know, it took me a while saying to him, I feel really uncomfortable with you doing this. And then when he said, would you rather that I felt physically uncomfortable in who I am, and I was like, actually no, that's not fair, you know. He wouldn't ask the same thing of me, so I need to be kind of kind about that.
Yeah, I think that recognition as well of that, you know, not everybody's going to develop an eating disorder. And I think, you know, that always is the biggest problem for me, because I'm like, but there's so many different things that can cause an eating disorder. You know, we can't pinpoint it down to one thing. So then I get worried for people that I love that they are going to develop one. But then, you know, I think that's a really difficult thing to navigate. But I think, you know, in my experience, all I have done is said, you know, I'm a voice or a shoulder if you need to talk to anybody about me, you know, feeling a bit more uncomfortable about these behaviors, I'm here. Which I think is a better way to approach it than all these things you're doing, they're so negative, they're so disordered, they're really bothering me, I don't like it, stop. Because that's probably not gonna help your relationship either. But that was fantastic, so thank you so much. I hope everybody listening has got some tips and advice, and maybe even just found some comfort in this period, because I think often hearing it from somebody else can be quite nice to know that people feel the same. So thank you very much, Christina, and I hope you have a wonderful Christmas and Happy New Year.
You too. Thank you for having me.
I hope this episode has helped put you in a festive mood and also given you some tips and tricks for the festive period. I know it can be really difficult, but hold on in there, because it doesn't have to be perfect. It's all about hope, joy, and spending time with those that you love. Next week, we'll be joined by Jason Wood, who has struggled with orthorexia and wrote the book Starving for Survival, which explains his experience of orthorexia. He also gives some tips on New Year and facing diet culture bullshit.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from.
Thanks to everyone for their support so far. If you want to support the podcast further, you can become a patron, which allows us to keep producing weekly episodes to spread awareness of eating disorders and provide other resources for those struggling with an eating disorder. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.